Welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. My name is James Gilmore. This is episode number 450, woo, not 40, like I just said, likeable. Joining me today is the mathematically accurate Rick Cowley.
Hello.
And the intangibly effervescent Emily Soden.
Hi, I'm back.
You're back. Yeah, I say intangible because we reached out for you last week and you weren't there. There was nothing, just fairy dust in your wake.
Yeah, no, just the shape of my body in a door.
As you powered through it to head to London to do young adult book stuff, was it fun? We did mention it to the listeners last week. Report back, how was it?
Yes, it was very fun, except that it was like 36 degrees.
In a big convention centre.
Yeah, Comic-Con was worse. That one like smelt like Gamescom.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
The hum.
I saw one of the best marketing things last week, though, was I can't remember the name of the company, but they were handing out survival packs if you signed up to their email list.
Okay.
And inside the pack was like some plasters for, you know, all of us ladies and our blisters, and like a pen and a paper fan.
Paper fan, good, like that. What's the blisters from what? From doing gaming? Gaming blisters or book blisters?
No, you just like, I mean, just shoes. I always get shoes. Oh. Like, if I'm walking around London, I always get blisters in the back of my ankles.
Ah, okay. Fair enough.
So it's always good to have plasters. But it was the fact that it was so hot, they could have asked me to sign away a part of my soul, and I would have said, yes, now give me the fan.
Yeah, I'm suffering that again. Everyone's probably sick of hearing British people whinge about it being hot, but I will just say that we had 2 days or so of rain and the temperature dropped, and honestly, I was just like rolling around in next to the river in the soaking wet, just crying with joy because it was so nice to have weather again.
Yes, this is temperature, which is like, what, going to be 22-ish, maybe? Like, yeah. I'm sitting here in a t-shirt and some shorts, and I'm happy. I've got my hot coffee back on.
Well, I'm dying down here. It's gone back up to being boiling in Bournemouth. It's just a nightmare. The reason we're all whinging about this, because I've seen lots of people online being like, oh, British people complaining about it being like 25 degrees. It's like 27 in LA every day, at least, grow up. It's like, yeah, but LA's built to be hot.
Yeah, we don't have aircon here. We have fans, and apparently that's bad for us.
We have central heating. That's the only thing we can turn on when it's hot. And that's no good. Everything, our grass is dying. Our plants are wilting because they're not designed for this weather. The entire country is built to be a nice temperate 18 degrees with a bit of cloud. So for us, it's just absolute death. So I'm sitting here, and I have to close the window for the podcast as well. So I've just got this fan far away enough so you can't hear. But I've just got a little bit of wind, a little bit of breeze, just tickling the back of my ankles. It's not the same, though. The suffering that we go through for this podcast. Yeah, so apart from whinging about the weather, what have we got to talk about? Well, Call of Duty is happening on mobile in more ways than one and in more studios and territories than one. We'll be talking about that. Rick, you've been playing around with Nintendo again, going up there on your special Nintendo missions, and you've got your hands on Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu / Eevee and bloody Super Smash Bros. Ultimate.
Woo! Hype.
So hype indeed. So you'll be telling us a little teaser about what those two games feel a bit like. Plus, we've got literally breaking news regarding Fortnite and the Android version of it. Also, out and about this week, we have got the likes of Pocket City, Animorph, Maths and Sorcery, One More Button and more. Plus, an interview with the guys behind The Respawnables, which is celebrating its 5-year anniversary. And I asked them basically how on earth they're still going and how you keep a game running on the App Store for half a decade and keep it popular and relevant in the face of all that competition. But first, the news. The Call of Duty franchise is no stranger to mobile. We've had lots of different versions of the game, ranging from classic first-person shooters to weird combination games where you can suddenly switch to an elevated top-down view. I remember covering that game, can't remember what it's called. And breach and clear style games, they've tried everything with it. There's probably a Match 3 puzzler out there somewhere. But the news arrived this week that there is another Call of Duty game coming to mobile, this time from Tencent, and specifically the studio behind the recent popular Smash hit, PUBG. Now, this is the one that they think is only going to be released in China at the moment, right?
Yeah, so far there's no news for it coming west or anything like that. But they kind of said the same thing with PUBG. Mm. As in, like, I remember when that news first came out, it was like, oh, they're bringing PUBG to China. No word, no Western release. Realistically, if it's going to be big enough, they did so well with PUBG, they probably will bring it west.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. So they've been working with Activision, obviously the guys behind Call of Duty. So we've had the Rob Kostick, who's the VP of Call of Duty, has said, quote, "We're working closely with one of Tencent's top mobile studios, Timmy is the name, to develop a fun and original Call of Duty experience that delivers superb gameplay and mechanics to mobile players." So, you know, blah, 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 we're making a game, it's going to be great. It's every press release ever. The reason this is sort of quasi-interesting to me, beyond just like, well, we're getting better at doing first-person shooters on mobile, so, you know, they improve all the time, this could be quite good, maybe. I imagine there'll be a bunch of, A, free-to-play stuff, because it's obviously going to be free-to-play, and B, they might draw from more recent popular ones, like Shadowgun Legends has done quite well, and obviously PUBG, being as it's coming from the same studio. So I'm wondering, is this the first time that Call of Duty will feature a Battle Royale mode?
I don't know. To be honest, like, I've never really paid much attention to these sort of games in the past, but 2018 for me has brought about some really, really cracking shooters on mobile. I usually find them really janky, but this year they've just kind of blown them out, and I don't know if that's because of the Battle Royale mode.
Because of the PUBG and Fortnite stuff taking over a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume that in Call of Duty it's going to be more shoot and respawn.
Yeah. Because if you do the kind of one hit and dead, you know, permadeath stuff in Call of Duty, it really changes the dynamics. Do you think it's crossing the streams, putting a Battle Royale mode in Call of Duty? Do you think that's, like, too much cross-pollination?
I do think that'll be... Sorry, I kind of stopped myself mid-thought just then.
No, I like this. I think we should describe all of our feelings in like, vowel sounds. That's wicked. That's basically a Brass Eye sketch, isn't it, at one point? Can you describe it in a word? No. The sound? Ugh.
Well, they're already doing Battle Royale in the next Black Ops.
Are they?
On console, yes, that's the big thing.
Oh, there you go.
They've dropped single player entirely, and it's going to just be multiplayer zombies and Battle Royale. So
ooh,
it's not
I
know. It's not hugely surprising that the mobile version would have Battle Royale if it did. But one thing that I noticed they did say is they're going to bring, like, classic characters, classic weapons, I think, classic maps was the more interesting part.
And
so So I think it's going to be a fairly traditional COD experience, just on mobile, and I'm very interested to see how that works.
Speaking of which, this is not the only Call of Duty game that's supposedly coming to mobile from a large developer. King... And you would have covered this when you were on BizRec. They were working on a Call of Duty game as well, as far back as 2017.
Yep. They set up a studio, I think they set up a studio where they definitely were hiring for a team to work on prototypes for a mid-core Call of Duty game. And they keep sort of advertising that they're hiring for this, never reveal what the game actually is or what form it's going to take. But yeah, that could be interesting as well, because King doesn't have a great history in mid-core.
Well, they're known for the Match 3 stuff, and obviously, you know, that's what their Candy Crush is, that's their game, that's what made them the billions. But as you guys have pointed out on Biz, they've had a couple of biggish titles, or mid-core games they were working on. One's called Rise of Tyrants, and one was this action RPG called Hero, both of which have subsequently been cancelled, right?
Yeah. What was... Oh, I remember Hero. I think I remember it by a different name, which is why I'm getting confused. Yeah, that was... good, decent action RPG that I played very briefly. It was in soft launch for a few months, so it just disappeared. Mm. Rise of Tyrants, I believe, was in development for at least over a year at their Singapore studio, and then I'm fairly certain, on the quiet, they just shut the whole studio down. So not really a good sign for their future of mid-core. But there was an interesting thing that they were doing midway through last year, I think, was they started pumping out loads of mid-core-ish titles into soft launch, and then they've canned two of them, and they're working on one, which I think maybe I can't say out loud the name, and also I don't remember it.
That's helpful. That's a really good way to not break your NDA. Forget everything they told you.
But it's clearly a sort of an area that they are currently developing in and have been exploring for a while. So since they're now owned by Activision, they've got the license without having to worry about paying any money for it, so a game will definitely happen.
feels like the influence of Activision, doesn't it? The idea, like, they suddenly go, hey, can we try some mid-core stuff? Because if King can get the mid-core stuff right, then it means they can pull all of their franchises over and do kind of mid-core half versions of them.
Yeah.
Rather than just doing the Call of Duty or the Destiny Match 3 puzzler, which is, you know, what you would think King would be good at doing. Because that's how they made their billions. But, yeah. So we'll keep our eye on both of those games and see if they turn up and if they are any cop. One thing we have been looking forward to, in terms of mid-core style first-person or third-person shooters, is Fortnite. Fortnite destined to be coming to Google Play for a while. There have been lots of like rumblings about what that date might be, and I think the date was going to be pretty soon. So, with that in mind, what's the date, guys?
We don't know.
I mean, we don't know.
You've got the date. Tell me the date.
We don't know.
We don't know, James.
I can tell you what we do know.
What do you know?
We do know it's not coming to Google Play. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, 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 dun.
That's not summer. That's not summer at all. You lied to my face.
Well, what?
To my mic. My headphones. They're jumping out of my ears in absolute horror. Can't hear anything now. What's going on?
A large picture of your face just stuck on my TV at all times so I can tell lies to it whenever I want.
Oh, man. I suppose it's better than darts. Just mistruths. One thing we should point out, if you are an Android user, for example, in the West somewhere, if you're in the UK, if you're in Europe, if you're in the States, then Google Play, that's how you get your games. It's the primary app store. It is not the primary app store, for example, in China or other areas.
Well, because it's banned in China, but yeah.
There is that, yes. Google in China. Although I've seen that they're planning on introducing a new censored version of Google in China. Google are trying to make inroads back in there,
yep.
So it may pop up. Now, when they say Fortnite is not coming to Google Play, so where will you download it from? How will you download it from? Because most people, I imagine, if they use Google devices, that's the only thing they've ever used to download an app.
Well, yeah, but anyone who has been playing Fortnite, like on PC or something, you know, you just download a program on the actual website itself to then get the game.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how they're doing it. You got to go to Epic and download a launcher app, and then you can play the game from there. Nice and simple.
And do you want to know why they're doing that?
Do explain.
It's for the hella cash. They have not said it, but it's obvious. Google takes
30%, isn't it?
Yeah, 30% of any money you make off that game. And Fortnite, I think it's already made $1 billion on mobile. I'm probably exaggerating. It's made so much money, though, in the small amount of time it's been on iOS.
Yeah. It's a couple mil per day, at least, isn't it?
Yeah. So, if you're launching on iOS, you have to go through the App Store. There is literally no other way to do it. On Android devices, you don't need to go through Google Play. It's just the best way to do it, because of discoverability. Fortnite doesn't need discoverability. It's the biggest game in the world.
Yes.
People will hunt it down of their own accord, and that's kind of what Epic's banking on. And because of that, they can save that 30% and just make so much more money.
You've literally got a game which is bigger than Google's entire App Store platform.
Ta-da!
In some ways.
I hadn't considered it like that.
But it's basically saying we don't need your poxy store, which runs the entire like Western Android market.
That's terrifying in a way.
It's mad, isn't it? Yeah. We'll let you know when it does go live. Before we go to the interview bit, I do want to quickly touch on the fact that you buggered off to Nintendo again, one of your little recces, and you got your hands on two highly anticipated games. We're going to do proper reviews of them, obviously, later when they're out, so not mega detail, but a little bit about Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu Eevee. How did this feel as the first proper, actual, legit Pokemon game on Switch?
It's very good. It's basically a remake of Red Blue.
Okay.
Which is really cool. Although I'd say it's more a remake of Yellow, since you have a Pikachu or an Eevee following you around on your shoulder. And you can have a second Pokemon trailing you as well, I noticed. It's got all the combat mechanics, so it's turn-based, pick your four things. It's got all the running around in grass, except this time you can actually see the Pokemon in the grass. So you don't...
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's not completely random encounters. You see them all sort of bunching together and you go, okay, I'm going to capture that one.
Okay.
It's got Pokemon Go-style catching, so you don't... I don't think you battle the Pokemon if you're just capturing them, which is interesting, but you get experience points for catching them, so you can still level up and grind that way. it feels great, it plays great, it looks wonderful. The little Pokeball Plus controller thing, which is like the shape of a Pokeball with just a single joystick, is actually amazing. You click it to select things and it just works, and you can just, it's got motion controls and it lights up in certain cases, and you can hear the Pokemon that's inside the Pokeball if you shake it next to your ear. I didn't actually hear it myself because I forgot to check, but someone else I was with did it and they were like, oh my god, it was so cool, it was the greatest thing.
So to me it sounds just unbelievably like cruel and sadistic, where you're like, matter, and you've got this thing going, wee, Rick, wee! Inside.
But no, it's a really cool game. It's way better than I thought it would be from the brief 10 minutes that I played of it, and I'm definitely excited to play more.
Rad. Okay. Well, the other one, there's a major note, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, which is, again, the first Super Smash Bros. One to appear on Switch, the debut. People are going mad for this. This franchise continues to just bang, as far as the internet is concerned. Do it bang, Rick.
It do. It is the best version of Smash Bros. Yet.
Gowsers.
It just feels amazing. It's really difficult to describe because I can't, like, I've played Smash competitively in the past very briefly, but I just don't know how to describe it in terms of like movement and stuff like that, but it just feels perfect. It just, in every way, it's all just there. It's all smooth like butter. It's just the characters and everything, and I don't really have the words for it other than to say it's just amazing, and everyone who likes all the Smash games should pick it up and play it, and it'll be great.
Okay, that's good to hear. Well, December 7th, apparently, for that one, unless there's any hiccups along the way, and for the Pokemon Let's Go, yada yada, then we're looking for apparently November 16th as a release date for that one. So there you go. Two to look forward to there on your Switch. And sum them both up in a sound, Rick.
Woo!
I'll take it. Cast your minds back to 2013. The App Store was really taking off in terms of free-to-play games appearing, one of which was The Respawnables, which came from Digital Legends, a third-person multiplayer shooter. 5 years later, the game is still going strong, with 45 million downloads and 2.5 billion matches in the intervening half decade. I'm joined today by David Prepignan, who's going to talk to me a little bit about how this game has survived for so long and what updates are coming to change and improve it. David, thanks for joining me today.
Hello.
Those are some big numbers that I just quoted there. I'm going to throw out some game names at random. So let's say Guns of Boom, we got Modern Combat Versus, Shadowgun Legends, all third-person shooters that have a cartoony style to them and have come in the last couple of years. How is it that the Respawnables are still going after all this time in the face of all the competition that's come in the intervening 5 years?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think one of the main reasons is the community, because we started building this up on 2013, as you said, and community has been growing super strong on years, and we've been trying to deliver them what they expect, and that's what keeps us growing and improving the game. We update the game a lot, and we don't stop releasing new content, new game modes, and everything. I think it's really important. It's every month you have something new to play.
Well, I was going to ask, because we talk to a lot of people about their brand new game on this show. We're always having people in whose game's coming out this week or the week before, and they're kind of trying to sell us on it or give us some explanation about what it's like to launch and develop a game. In this instance, I'm really fascinated to see how you keep a game alive, because in a lot of cases, games on the App Store have a very short shelf life. They can be quite disposable. They can disappear just through people deciding it's not interesting anymore and they just vanish. And it's only a few games that really go the distance. You mentioned constant updates. How many updates do you think you've done? Is it literally like at least one update a month for the entire 5 years?
Yeah, more or less. At the beginning, we had a lower rate, of course.
Okay.
We had like, we found the need to update the game because we had to do something to keep it alive. So we decided to start the events. I think the first one was Grenade Fest, we call it. It was a really basic event where you had to kill people with grenades and make challenges related to grenades.
Right.
And we started to evolve from that.
What's the trick to getting first-person or third-person shooter controls right on a touchscreen? Because for me, this is one of the greatest sticking points of these kind of games when you put them on mobile.
Mm-hmm. We had really clear from the beginning that we had to have, because Respawn was on one of the first third-person shooters for iOS,
yeah.
And we tried to keep it as clean as possible. And I think it's one of the keys for the game. Gameplay is really easy. Anyone can play. When a QA starts here, it's really interesting to see how they react to the controls, because they see it a bit weird at the beginning, but they get used to it super fast. And I've even heard people say that it's the same as using an Xbox controller, for example. So the key is to keep it simple, I think, and not too busy. I mean, we don't have a lot of actions in the screen. And that's great, because you only have to focus on navigating and shooting, and that's it. The level design is also really important for that, because you have to build the level specifically for that. For example, when you have to turn, you have to make sure that the turn is around 90 degrees. If it's more than that, you may find players losing around or having really bad experience playing, and we try to keep it as clean as possible.
I noticed that you still got the ability to choose to fire, as in you can look around and then there is a fire button, which once pressed, you can also still move and look around in order to aim the gun. But you haven't gone for the default, the moment the reticle passes over another character, it starts firing, which I've noticed has become the trend in a lot of first or third person shooters.
Yeah, we've started to see it. I mean, our game is from 2013. Gameplay is evolving, and we've seen it from other companies that they immediately jump to that, and now it's a standard in shooters. And we are just taking a look at it. We are not confident on making the change yet. It's a new trend on shooters on mobile. What is certain is that what we have now, it works. So why changing something that works?
Well, you mentioned the community, and presumably the game has built quite a following over the time that it's been around. What kind of feedback do you get from them? What have you learned in the intervening 5 years that players like from these kind of mobile games, and what they really don't like?
We've tried to the events we have now. We have like 7,000 followers on Twitter. 70,000, sorry, not seven.
Mm-hmm.
we hear a lot of them. We have even a channel here in the studio where we share the memes and their feedback and everything. What they ask is, and what we made is to give them something new every month, something they can play different and challenge, not just playing the same thing again and again, but getting different events. We've made things like the Ghostbusters events, where you have to chase ghosts until hunting sitting ducks all around the level. We've made that with added like new weapons like bows and everything. I think what they need is new stuff.
So what was the example of something when you released an update or you made a change and the community went, oh no, we don't like this. This is terrible. And you guys had to go, and react to something and make adjustments accordingly.
I remember a long time ago when we had the Mexico event, you had to kill people wearing Mexico event gear, for example.
Right.
They complain a lot about that. You are basing your experience on being lucky on getting someone that is wearing something, for example.
So okay.
We received really bad feedback on that. It's really difficult to modify an event live when it's been released, so we had to keep it for a month, but we try to learn from it and avoid that kind of stuff. We have a long list of the stuff in our internal wiki of things that we should not do because we made them in the past, they didn't like the players, they were complaining, so we try to avoid them.
How do you ensure a game like this, which has been around for a long time and has got a very established user base, how do you make sure that it's still inviting and welcoming for people who might want to pick up the game for the first time? Is there a danger that they're going to feel alienated when they're dropped into a game filled with people who've been doing it for half a decade?
That one is difficult. The actual status of the game ensures you that you have a live event when you start playing. So that's something great. You don't start playing a game that is vanilla, let's say. You have an event running that will run you with great rewards and will put you up to speed like really fast. So if you start as a newbie and you start playing the event, you'll get stuff that made you feel better against playing other players. So
bit of a boost early on.
Yeah, a fast boost to speed up. And also I think that just playing training or multiplayer is just fun. I mean, it's really, really simple in terms of control. The action is really fast, so you don't need, it's not a steep introduction to it. So you start playing really fast, you start having fun super fast, and that's one of the keys to keep growing the community.
What about reacting to the changes in the App Store itself? I mean, just, for example, the OS, when you guys launched, I mean, maybe it was, what, iOS 7? 6? 7? Something like that?
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's changed every year, and they made the switch from, you know, 32 to 64-bit as well, which threw a lot of people off and caused a lot of games to stop working. Has it been a lot of work to keep the game running just on the App Store and on iOS devices all over the world?
The truth is that we are really lucky to have our own engine that it's built here next door. It's called Charisma Engine. So we have our CTO 2 tables from us. And they done a great job keeping the game alive because we've suffered, like you said, the 32 jump to 64. That was crazy. If you were running Unity, you had to wait Unity to update that. And
yeah,
we made it here in-house super fast. I wouldn't say super smooth because you have to make it run, you have to make it work, but we made it.
At what point do you go, right, I think it's time for a sequel? I mean, I'm thinking of things like popular multiplayer. I mean, it's not free-to-play game, but something like Destiny, which effectively has, despite the premium price point, a sort of free-to-play economy, which is once that you're in, there is, you know, there's stuff you can buy, there's cosmetics, it's a massively multiplayer, and it's all about that in-world sort of economic platform, effectively. And they still went, okay, 2 years, you're done, sequel, we're moving on. You guys have stayed with it because obviously you've built the user base in that game, everyone likes it, so why would you stop? To some degree. But is there a point where you think that there is a Respawnables 2 and you have to go, all right, then we're going to shut this down and move everyone over? Or do you just keep this going?
We faced that 2-3 years ago, like what's next with the project. And we decided to go with, instead of a sequel or something, we made After Pulse. It's still a mobile shooter, but it's not a sequel from Respawnables. We can say that we have interesting projects, but, well, it's complicated. It's in progress. But right now, Respawnables is super strong. After Pulse is going great, too. So we're investigating new areas. And we will for sure update the community.
As you listen to this on the podcast, you should have just put a new update live or roundabout now-ish. What's going out in that update? What's new?
That's the 5 years update with great rewards. Some of the best items in the game will be available there. We'll have different tiers every week for a month. 10 new t-shirts, 4 new caps, all moving around Respawnables, and we're celebrating the 5 years. I can say that we'll have also a hat with a mythical unicorn, for example, a parrot launcher, a coconut launcher, a unicorn launcher. So, yeah, it's great.
Well, you can get all that virtual merch in the new update for the Respawnables, which you can get right now on iPhone, iPad, and Android. David, thank you for talking to me today.
A pleasure.
And about this week, I would say that this isn't like a super high profile one in terms of big names or franchises like your Asphalts and Call of Duties and whatnot, but there's some quality here, starting off with a game that I didn't expect to like and I'm quite enjoying. Pocket City is out, and as the name suggests, it is one of those city building games where you have to create a district for houses and build some houses, and then, oh no, these people need jobs, so create some industrial areas so they can work, and a power station for electricity, and then they're all looking a bit sad, so build some trees so they can frolic with the bees in the park and all that. And we've had plenty of these city building games that, you know, are a bit Sims City, and what's the other one? There's another city building game. City Skylines?
Yeah.
Yeah, that. So it's a little mobile version of, you know, city building games. I'm not generally into these. I find them quite tedious, and all those management ones where it's just moving numbers around and responding to, You need more of this, less of this, and I don't know, it just bores me. This is quite nice. This is oddly calming when I played it, more than the other ones, which I think introduce a sense of like Excel spreadsheet panic of moving numbers into the right column so everything balances out. This one, I was trying to work out why it feels calming and quite soothing, because you've played it as well, Rick. It's not like really bright, gaudy colours. It's a very sort of clean, not super minimal, but just like gentle visual design.
Yeah.
Nothing shouting at you on the screen, which I liked.
Mm.
And then I noticed, and I think this might be a reason for it, there's no in-app payment stuff. It's a premium game. And when I say premium, I mean £4.99 premium.
Mm.
And these games, generally speaking, are free-to-play style things, which are constantly throwing, you know, 50 currencies at you and counting down the timers on a billion different stuff and chests that will unlock in 2 days and all this. It's not got any of that. So it's just build your city, build it at your own pace, work your way through, no bright primary colours going, bah, warning. And something about all of that together just made me kind of go, I quite like this. I'm having a nice relaxed time building my city instead of feeling like I'm in a playable heart attack.
Yeah, it's just very gentle. Like, you've got quests and stuff to do, so you got to build up your town to certain levels and get income growing to this point and so on and so forth. But you don't have to do those straight away. There's nothing timed or anything. It's just do this at your own pace, build the city however you want. Yeah, you've got to worry about money, but, you know, it keeps coming in kind of thing. And you start off with that small area and you can see around you places where you can expand to, but you don't have to. There's just things to do once you hit a certain point, I suppose. And I noticed as well that, like, your citizens will just wander around and say random crap while you're doing it. And, yes. Like, some of the things they say are just really weird or hilarious. It's like the tonal mixture is just sort of, like, horrifically depressing and totally bizarre. or at least that was my experience with it.
There's also, I should point out, the opportunity to build loads of cities. You have up to 20 cities that you're running at any one time. And, importantly, sandbox cities, which is a mode where literally just do what you want. Just, you know, here's all the stuff, fill your boots, make a fun city. So, yeah, Pocket City is the name of that one. I think the review is up, or we'll certainly be doing one, because it's a big premium thing. You've been playing... What's the one you've been playing, Rick? You've been doing self-care.
I have. I've been doing hashtag self-care.
Oh, good.
From True Love, Inc. That's spelled T-R-U-L-U-V-I-N-C.
Okay. Well, We'll let that slide. Yeah. What's the actual game like?
So it's just a very gentle... it's not really a game. It's more kind of a self-care app sort of thing. You do sort of small little exercises to calm yourself down. I think you're kind of helping somebody who's having a bad day and they're just crumpled up in bed and they just go, we're just not going to move out of bed, but we're going to do some small things. Everything's here. Everything's gentle. Everything's nice. There's a cat you can stroke. There's, you know, you can tap on different things and get little messages about how powerful phones are, but we need to spend time away from them and stuff. It's just a really nice... It's been designed by Brecode, who used to be the AI director at Ubisoft and worked on the Assassin's Creed games and stuff like that, and has now gone off to sort of make these gentle, soft games. And it achieves that really well. It's got these mini games where it's like, oh, you just need to breathe in and breathe out, and you can breathe for as long as you want, and then you can quit and it's fine. And you can change the pace of the breathing and all this kind of thing if you want. You can like adjust your cat's collar and backdrops and stuff like this and change the room so it's more personal to you. There's like a word game where you just need to complete words, but there's only two letters that you need to drop in, so it's really simple, and you just keep getting that sort of constant... It constantly makes you feel like you're achieving something, even though you're doing incredibly basic tasks.
So it's just trying to put you at ease.
Exactly.
I compared it to an app, which I forget the name of, but you can see a video that Alicia and I did. We were playing around with it. But the idea being a very meditative app where you had to move a blob very, very slowly around the screen. And if you went too fast and got too excited, you would fail. So you have to go super slow. And after doing it for a couple of minutes, you realize you're putting yourself into a trance state and a fugue. And it's sort of designed to just chill you out for a minute, which is quite a nice idea if you, you know, suffer from a little bit of the anxiety. That must be quite nice to relax with.
Like, I do have a bit of anxiety every now and then, and the first thing that, like, I was just reading the text and doing the little things, and I did start to feel calmer and just a bit more relaxed, because it's written in a very friendly way as well. It's been very clearly thought through. Every single word has a purpose and a meaning to sort of help calm you down. The cool thing as well is it's completely free. So there's no IAPs, there's no ads or anything like that. It's just a free app game thing that you can download and play as little or as much as you like. It encourages you to play as little or as much as you like. It's gently encouraging you just to take some time out, but still do something. And I think that's really effective for some people. So I would definitely give it a go if anybody's feeling stressed or anxious or anything like that.
It's self-care, right?
Hashtag self-care.
Yeah, there you go.
Difficult to find, probably, but it's on the front page of the App Store right now, so you should definitely check
it out. Okay, nice. I wanted to talk to you about all the new games you've been playing this week, all those new releases. But you haven't really been playing new games, have you?
I think there's someone at my door.
You can't escape.
That's a banging non sequitur. Well, all I was going to say is, you haven't really been playing the new games. You've been playing the old games with the new bits. We're back to another installment of Emily Quite Like Stardew Valley. Stardew got a multiplayer update, didn't it?
It did, but only for PC at the moment. They're still working on the Switch one.
Oh, really? Mm. So did you have to go back to PC, or did you just carry on playing the Switch version?
Both. Both is good.
Wow. Do you got two? Okay, cool. So what's happening in the multiplayer version? This does tie into mobile, because it's going to be coming to Switch anytime. So what's the multiplayer actually add? Is this like there's suddenly two people on your farm running around, and you have to chase them off with a stick and visit other people's farms? What's the deal?
No, this is like, you know, you and a friend, or, you know, partner, or whoever you want to join you on your escapades, start up your own farm. And
So it's a joint farm venture.
Yeah, it's a joint farm venture. Also, I have no idea what my voice was doing just then. I was going a bit Stewie Griffin.
Sorry.
It's like, we go out to the start a farm, and then we're going to go and get some horses, and we're going to go and meet all the valley people. That's as high as my voice goes. But you just go around, you build your farm. You've got like your own little hut, but you can sleep in the same bed if you want to, because sometimes it's easier to just panic run to one bed when you reach, like, you know, 10 to 2 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's exactly Stardew Valley, exactly as it is, except you can play with other people and get stuff done like twice as quickly.
Okay.
Like for all my Stardew Valley people out there, my partner and I were just about through spring. It's like spring 26th or something at the moment, and we've got a coop, we've got a barn, we've got sprinklers, we've got level 80 in the mines. I mean, you know, not to brag or anything, but that's pretty good.
Does it run the risk, though, that mode of you going to sleep, having made your lovely farm look all brilliant, and then you wake up and then whoever your co-op partner is has trashed the place?
Oh yeah. No. Like, whoever's running the server, whoever's hosting the server has the power.
Right.
I played this with some of my friends during its beta period last month, and found out that if you axe a crop or some seeds, you get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's Don't Starve and burning all your bushes all over again, man.
Right.
Anyone who's played Don't Starve will know that one.
So potentially relationship-ending stuff, or it could be a lovely rekindling of affection between two people.
It's a risky one.
Over a shrubbery.
My boyfriend wasn't too pleased when I'd spent $3,000 on a new axe without telling him.
Oh, mate. Oh, no. God, this now sounds awful. You've got the possibility for virtual Barneys as well as real-life ones.
Yeah.
Well, that will be coming to Switch sort of soonish, and we'll let you know when it's actually gone live on the Switch version of it. Back to this week's stuff. Math and Sorcery is a game I've played a little bit of. It actually looks like those games that replicate tabletop RPGs. So you're in a library and the books are coming down from the shelves, and you're kind of being talked to by someone who sounds a bit like a dungeon master. So it feels a little bit like that. But the way that you fight the characters, turn-based battles, only instead of using elemental powers or, you know, tapping in combos, you do math. So you have to get addition, subtraction, division, whatever stuff thrown at you. And a question appears, and then a little timer starts counting down. And you have to answer as many maths questions as you can before the timer hits zero. And then the number of maths questions you've answered correctly, that is the multiplier on your attack. So it's doing that brain training sort of thing, and it reminds me a little bit of that Typing of the Dead, where it's, you know, you're typing as many letters as you can to shoot zombies. So you're just turning work, arithmetic, spelling, whatever it is, education into combat. And it's actually, it was all right. Like, you know, I'm not going to play a lot of it because I hate math. So I probably wouldn't recommend it if you don't like doing sums. But if you do, and you like seeing them turn into magic spells, it's probably quite good for you. So Math and Sorcery is the name of that one. One More Button is a game I've played a bunch of this. This is weird and clever. Anyone had a go on this?
Nope.
No, not yet.
So it's a block-pushing, puzzle-solving game where you find yourself in like a grove, a top-down area of trees, and there are four blocks to start off with on the screen, and there's an exit which you have to unlock. On top of the blocks are arrows, and you kind of look at it and go, I can't move this, I can't move my character, I swipe on the screen, nothing happens. And you realise that the four blocks, which are just in different places all over the screen, one's got an up arrow, one's got down, one's got left, one's got right. And initially, you look at that, and if you're used to playing games, you think, well, that's the direction in which the block can be pushed. That's the thing we've been programmed with. What it actually is they are your controls. So not only are you supposed to move the blocks themselves are the up, down, left, and right keys. So you need to, for example, move some blocks out of the way. So you'll press the forward block, and your character moves forward, but that forward block might have to be pushed down and to the right to get out of the way. So you're constantly like moving around, rearranging your control scheme on the screen, because the controls are the puzzle pieces. You get used to it fairly quickly, but when it's constantly changing, you rely so much on muscle memory when you're playing games, of like, you're not even looking at where the controllers are, you just know where the up, down, left, and right keys are. So when you're actively pushing them about, that's kind of bizarre. So there's the muscle memory element of it. The other element of it is, sometimes you'll hit levels and you'll realize there's no up. There's like a left and a right and a down and another down. You're like, okay. And then there's a little kind of refresh button, you know, the little circle that has an arrow on it, that kind of thing. And you realize that's, it is a refresh button, and you'll restart the level if you press it. But also, if you push a block onto it, it'll spin the block 90 degrees. So you're like, ah, I have to create an up so I can move up. But in order to create that up, I have to move around without the aid of an up movement. I can only go left, right, or down. So I have to plan my strategy to, if I go down to the left and I grab this block and I move this one and I push it, push it, push it, and then hit the little rotational tile, it will then whoop, sweep round, and now I have an up, and now I can move up and move over and grab the other block that I need and move it around to open the exit. So it's a lot of forward thinking, and it's a bit of a brain frazzler. But in a good way. I've been quite impressed with it. It's got a very simple, like, sort of greenish style. I'd like a little bit more variety in the look. But clever mechanic that I haven't seen before, and it made my head hurt.
It does sound very cool.
It made it hurt with cleverness, not with sadness. So, One More Button is the name of that one. I've already captured some footage of it. I think there'll be a video appearing very, very soon. Anything else out this week that we thought we liked the look of or was good?
There was Animorphs, but I think only you enjoyed that.
Apparently, just me for Animorphs, yeah. Harry was getting very cross with Animorphs. The best way to explain Animorphs, did you play any of it, Rick?
I did. So it's like a 3D object of dots, and you have to rotate it around to try and make the actual image that you're looking for. Yeah?
Absolutely right. The best way I would describe it is it's Zenbound with dots instead of shadows. So you're rotating this 3D cluster, so it looks like you're looking at a kind of cosmos, a little universe of just dots in 3D space, and you can rotate and shift around. And yes, as you turn, you'll realize that the dots are starting to line up and maybe create lines. And from just the right angle, you'll see a pattern in the dots, and it's, oh, it's a fish. And then that's you complete the level. This is, I think, a bit Marmite, because I quite like these games, the spinning around and making really subtle movements to find the pattern. Harry was just getting furious and raging in the chat about how much he hated this game and how stupid it was, while in brackets conceding as also I'm not very good at it, which might be behind it. Whereas I quite liked it. I think that pushes its luck on a few occasions, like, because some of the shapes are quite, you know, there's lots of animals, horses and fish and that kind of thing. And then you get to one, level 13, and it was like, first time I hit a one where I was really struggling with it, and I just could not see what the pattern was. And when I finally got it, it was more by luck than judgment. And it's like resolved into something, and I was like, it looks like a green and red coloured sort of circle. It's only when I looked at the bottom of the screen and it said apple. And I was like, oh. I guess? Yeah? So that was the one where I thought, you're pushing your luck a bit there. That was just, you know, it's just an amorphous blob with two different colours in it. It didn't even have the stem, the little stalky bit that I would associate with an apple. You know, if I was going to draw a cartoon apple, I'd have a little stem coming out the top. So maybe it's pushing its luck in a couple of areas, but I actually quite liked it and thought it was quite clever and good and satisfying when I got it. But it's quite simple, isn't it? It's quite crude, the art style. It's not a very slick presentation.
No. But it's made by one man who is himself an artist. So,
oh, okay.
I believe. So it's not like a professional app developer making this game. It's just a dude. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of skill, and if you're listening to this dude who put this together, I'm not trying to say you made a bad game. I'm just saying, you know.
Well, it starts getting really complicated later, because initially, the dots are all the same colour.
Right.
And you move them around. What then happens later, when you get into the more difficult areas, is there are different coloured cubes at the bottom of the screen, and there's a load of different coloured spots all mixed together, and you realise you can rotate each individual cluster of colours separately.
God, no.
Oh, did you not get to that bit?
No, yeah. I quit out of the first level. Like, I span it round for a bit, and I was like, no.
I got to level 13, and yeah, it starts getting like, right, now you have to move all the red ones and try and find something resembling a pattern there. And when you find the pattern, it's only obviously going to be like a bit of the shape. Mm. And then you have to rotate all the green ones, and then that will form another bit, and then all the red ones. And that's when it gets really like, ah. But I think it's quite an ingenious idea. It's like pointillism in 3D space, the game. And it's challenging, but kind of cool. It's number 6 in arcade at the moment. It's doing all right in the app charts.
Not bad.
It's $1.99, £1.99. You can get that right now. Animorph is the name of it. There are others. Go and check out M's new release thing, but I think we've already run over time as it is. So we'll call it a day there. Thanks for listening. As always, do the rates and the reviews and subscribe. Again, we've had more subscribers, big download numbers this week. So thank you so much. I want to push the leave a review thing. I hate doing it because I hate iTunes as a piece of software. It's just awful. But saying that, if you do leave reviews, it gives us boosts and it makes us more discoverable and gets us more listeners. It means we can keep doing it. So if you can find it in your heart, we would love you and your heart for it. In the meantime, go play one of those games or more. They're good. They're fun. And we will see you next week for more of the same. Thank you for listening. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.